All right, you're listening to It's 5 o'clock Summer Real Estate Investor Podcast. Today, we're going to talk to a very good investor of mine, and now I consider a friend of mine, Kevin Gaithier, who's going to join us in the studio today. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Are you thinking about investing in real estate, building your net worth and your income, but you're just not sure where to start? I'm Joe Garner. I'm a mortgage officer and an investor. Let's explore your options on financing your investment property. Connect with me at jogarner.com. Call or text me, 901-482-0354. Proud to be a sponsor of It's 5 O'Clock Somewhere Real Estate Podcast.
Welcome back to It's 5 O'Clock Somewhere Real Estate Podcast. Kevin, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brad.
So Kevin flew in. He's a good investor of mine, one that I recently met due to tragic event that happened in my life with my ex-partner, Glenn, which you all have heard many, many stories about Glenn. He's an integral part of this team still today. A lot of what we do is a process that he created back when he first started. So I wanted to, before we get into that, Richard, who's also in the studio. So those of you who listen before, you know, our British producers here.
That would be me.
That would be you. I decided I wanted to insult you on air. So I Googled how to insult a British person. I want people to hear.
It's likely that this isn't going to work.
It's probably not, but it's not going to. No, if you look at the terms I'm going to read, I'd laugh if somebody said this to me. But this is what the British do to insult each other. They call each other Muppet. Is that something you use quite often? Muppet.
Yeah, you Muppet.
Right. Plonker. What the hell's a plonker?
Plonker is.
If somebody looked at me and said, you freaking plonker, I'd be like, what?
Yeah, someone is showing their incapability, basically. Such a plonker.
Someone who just made a silly mistake or poor decision. Who uses the word silly? Seriously? Y'all invented English. Y'all need to really learn how to speak it. Wally. Burke. Now, this one got me. Donut. Ooh, please.
Yeah.
You're hurting my feelings. Don't call me a donut.
Don't call
me. You vicious individual. No wonder the British lost the war.
I think you've missed out on all the best ones.
Sadly,
I can't say those on the air.
I was going to say, there's the one.
You can dumb button it if it's too harsh. I'm a big boy. I can take it.
Well, here's the thing. There are a lot of words in English that are slang.
Mm-hmm.
In one sense, they're profane, but in another, they're a compliment.
All right, use one of them.
Well, like bollocks.
Bollocks.
In the context that you use it, it could just mean could mean testicles.
Okay.
Or you say, it's the dog's bollocks. That means something is really, really good. Or you say, that's bollocks. That means it's crap.
They got a word for everything.
I guess it's kind of like the word fat, right?
No.
Dude says, chick is fat. Either she's big or she's hot. Right?
Well, pretty hot and tempting.
I'd be concerned about people that say that about people.
You're British. You're not concerned about what anybody says about anybody.
No.
Obviously.
That is
anyway,
true.
I just thought it was interesting. I was trying to find some really good stuff to insult a British person, and that's the crap that came up. I'm like, no wonder.
But
you guys lost the war.
You're also picking on the person
you
that
donut.
Doesn't really take offense to anything.
No, I know. Yeah, but assholes really do.
Thank God for that.
Yeah. All right, so we got Kevin in studio with us today. Kevin is a savvy, experienced investor, although we've talked. You say every day, I want to learn more. I want to know more. I want to do better, right? You're always striving to be a better investor. My first question for you, Kevin, is if you were to take your very first property, and let's say before you bought that property, you decided, I'm going to be a real estate investor.
Mm-hmm.
From that Kevin to the Kevin today, who just closed on three more properties.
Yep, just
we did
this
that week. Over the last 2 months it took to close them. How has that Kevin changed to the Kevin today? Thought process, strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people listen to us are new investors, and they're trying to figure out their strategy.
Mm-hmm.
I tell new investors all the time, what you believe today, I promise you in 12 months I'm going to ask you that question and your whole philosophy is going to change.
Yeah.
So what's changed?
Well, the learning lessons have shaped my opinion. And, you know, the reality is that until you experience these mistakes and screw ups, you know, yourself, it doesn't really hit home. It's what you learned in a seminar and what you read in a book. And you
seminar.
Can.
He said seminar.
I said, I know it's a trigger word for him.
Might as well just call me every dirty name in the book.
Look, you're going to get offended, but he's going to get triggered.
That is my trigger word.
There you go, right?
Well, I will be triggered.
And here's the reality is that I actually knew from a very young age that I wanted to be an investor in real estate. I wasn't exactly sure how. My grandmother always used to say, that's how wealthy people get wealthy. They own assets, they own real estate. And then I learned even myself, learned even more how a lot of the wealthy individuals that I was surrounded with, they owned assets, they owned real estate. However, I was super scared of making a mistake, because everybody that doesn't invest in real estate, especially residential rental real estate, they will say things like, well, yeah, but what if they don't pay their rent? And what if they trash your property? Or what if they fall down?
What if you buy a stock and it drops?
Well,
is that not, I mean, you're not an investor if you're scared of taking any risk at all.
Well, that's right. Exactly. So, but I was definitely scared, but I wanted to take steps. And so I did join a real estate investment, club. Several things that I've learned that I want to impart to the Kevin that was 20 years ago. Hopefully one of your listeners is that person, first things first, do your own math.
Right.
I saw a lot of the investors at the time, and we're talking now 2005, 2006, a lot of investors, they implicitly trusted their real estate salesperson, but didn't do their own math. Things will go up. You'll be able to refinance, no problem. Remember, this is 2005, right?
Before
the mortgage meltdown. And so they would buy all these, properties. So number one, do your own math.
Amen.
Number two, you must reserve for maintenance and capital expenditures. And we'll put a pin in that. We'll talk about that in just a second. You must reserve for vacancies, and you must pay attention to all the upfront costs that go into these properties, because many of the agents are simply going to show you what the principal, interest, taxes, and insurance might be on the property, and then show you the rent on the property and see, look, you're making money, right? But then you've got property management fees of 9%, and it's so easy to not to just trust that,
right,
and jump right in. And of course, my wife and I had to learn the hard way.
Well, as most investors do. Now, you missed one. You said capital and or
expenditures, and I said maintenance.
For those maintenance.
Separate things.
They're two separate things, but you didn't say oh fund. Because we always preach you got to have an oh fund.
Okay.
Because the oh is always going to happen.
Okay. So this for sure. Now, the oh fund is 6 months of rent for every single property we have under management. That is our oh fund. And I'll tell you what, man, when we bought five properties in 100 days in late 2007.
Wow.
And that is where, Brett, I saw so many people lose the properties that they had purchased over the last 5 years. Since we had 6 months of reserves for every single property, we were fine.
Okay.
We were fine.
Now, let me ask you this question. Because, I mean, let's face it, a lot of young guys come to us. They don't have, 40, 50 grand laying around in the bank to build a surplus fund out of the gate. We talk about taking a portion of your cash flow every single month,
mm-hmm.
put it away.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get your OS fund built,
mm-hmm.
and you're good, then now take that cash flow and pay down the mortgage. Pay it down. Because mm-hmm. the less you owe, less likely you're going to lose the property.
Mm-hmm.
Easier it is to maintain your income and debt service on that property. So would you advise someone taking, let's say they're making $350, $400 a month profit on every home,
mm-hmm.
or their first home every mm-hmm. month, do you advise them taking that whole $400 and stick it in a bank, at least for the first 6 months or so?
Yeah. So I can tell you what we did, and whether it's right or wrong is a different answer, okay? But I can tell you exactly what we did. Originally, our main goal was to pay off properties, and when we had the opportunity, we converted the 30 years or the ARMs or whatever they were, interest only. Remember, we could do interest only at the time, by the way. And we converted those into 15-year mortgages. And the idea, of course, was, great, we're going to pay these all off, okay? And we were building up great equity, and it was great. And that was the plan. And I started realizing that while the principal balance is being it's declining much, much quicker than it was before, and we were building up, all this equity, I realized that we were like, the business was not cash flowing as much as it could. So, and again, I'm happy to debate this.
Now, when you say cash flowing, as far as profitability or just producing cash, liquid cash that you could use?
Yeah.
So, because a lot of times people say, well, I'm not making any money on it. Well, but you're also putting $250 in a surplus account. You're adding $50 extra to your principal. You're doing this and doing that. But are you making a profit and reinvesting the profit back in the asset, or are you just losing money? That's what I'm, so clarify that.
Yeah, great. So when I'm looking at all of those costs, though, the maintenance, which those are soft costs, but they end up, you end up spending that money eventually. You know, the maintenance is the paint and the sink and, you know, that type of thing. And then there's the capital expenditures. That's like, okay, the new roof every 15 years and the HVAC units and all that kind of stuff. Those are the big expenses for, you know, capital expenditure. When I reserve for all those things, is it negative or is it zero or is it in the green and is it, you know, positive, you know, for us there? And of course, the debt service being the largest amount of expenses typically. And so with the 15-year mortgage, of course, in that scenario, that created a less profitable asset for us. And so what we decided, and again, I'm happy to debate this and happy to learn, just like you said, Brett, look, I'm 54 years old. The older I get, the more I realize how little I actually know and how much I have to learn. We had all this equity built up in all these properties. What good is that if we can't do anything with that? Great, look at Zillow and how much they're worth, but who cares? And mm-hmm. So what we chose to do at the time, and this was just before COVID, was to do cash out refis. Okay. What does that result in? That resulted in lower mortgage costs.
Right.
We pulled tax-free money out of those properties and invested that tax-free money into additional appreciating assets. So now what happened with the business? The business then generated more cash flow because the principal and interest payments went down. Our philosophy, and I'm happy to debate, and again, this is what we've done, and I'm always open to, you know, to learn. We believe that we would never pay off the property because we will constantly take tax-free money out of these appreciating assets and either use it for living expenses or use it for additional investments. Purchase. That's mm-hmm. right. That being said, there's the Dave Ramsey crowd that believes that, you know, debt isn't really that good and it's best to pay it off, and to each his own.
Well, it depends. You know, there's a term called leverage debt, you know, where you leverage assets and put yourself in debt to expand or grow or to reinvest. And that's different, in my opinion, than taking out a Discover card and going buying shoes, clothes, and going a cruise.
100%.
Different. But there's also an aspect that I harp on a lot.
Yeah, obviously.
I do get a lot of young investors from the seminars, that blatant four-letter word that comes out of California. Yeah. Another crazy word created by California, seminars. And they come to me with this grand scheme of, I'm going to buy 10 properties and quit my job, right? You're old enough now and you're an investor and you've done it long enough, you know that's a ridiculous concept. It's a ridiculous way to look at investing. Mm-hmm. No different than putting all your money in the stock market and just saying, I'm going to live off the dividends, mm-hmm. right? You reinvest it. But one thing that they don't register in their mind, and I want your opinion on this, when I evaluate returns mm-hmm. for a property, you'd be amazed at how many investors take their mortgage payment and attribute that to their return on cash out of pocket investment.
Hmm.
In a way that if you put up $20,000 on a property
yeah.
and you're bringing $300 a month positive cash flow out of it after all expenses, mm-hmm. your true ROI is going to be $300 a month times a year divided in 20,000.
That's right.
But they equate that payment. Somehow they've gotten in their head that payment is now part of their expense side. But I try to explain to them, well, hang on a second. You borrow the money from the bank.
Yeah.
The tenant pays you rent. You use that money they just gave you to pay back the bank.
Right.
So tell me where that came out of your pocket. Right. And why is that a part of your investment formula? Because it shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. Yes, debt service is a part of your cash flow. It can affect your cash flow. Mm-hmm. But as far as a true investment, cash out of pocket, invest into something, return on investment.
That's right.
Your mortgage payment, PITI, has zero to do with that. And do you believe the same thing? I mean, obviously? Or
yeah.
do you have a different take on that?
Well, no. So the way I look at investment properties now is, first things first, and this is something you taught me, which was the 1%
wow.
rule. I had never really understood this general idea of the 1% rule.
Right. Which is 12% gross return on your investment.
Yeah.
Rents for, if you buy pay $100,000 for a house all in,
right.
it rents for $1,000 a month or more. $120,000, $1,200 a month or more.
Right, right.
Period.
That's right. And first of all, a 12% return on a consistent basis, that's a pretty darn good, you know,
absolutely.
Good return, which helps you think about investing And this is why I'm from California, as you all know. I'm from Southern California. I would not invest in Southern California because I might as well take my cash and put it into the stock market, because it requires so much cash to put into a property in California, mm-hmm. so much cash to put into a property into California, that your return on investment, at least in the short term, is 2%, 3%, 4%, if you're not losing money. If you're not, you have to put so much down to make these properties cash flow that you might as well, you're better off putting it in the bank. So I look at these properties in two ways. So you taught me about the 1% rule, and I learned that over time. I just didn't know that there was a label to it when I understood that the rents relative.
Well, the philosophy is if you can get 12% gross annual,
yeah,
then you got to take your expenses and all that out. But if you can start at the 12%, what's going to happen next year? Rent's going to go up, value's going to go up. Your investment stays the same. So what you hope for over the next 5 to 10 years, you can show a significant ROI on that investment as that all begins to increase year in and year out.
Well, that's right. Actually, that would be the another learning lesson that we can go back to in just a second here, but put a pin in that one. But then the other way I look at it is that cash on cash return.
Right.
Right. So now I take all those expenses, you know, the debt service, you know, out of that, and I look at that and say, okay, the cash that these properties are generating, that better be better than putting it into an index mutual fund.
Absolutely.
It had better be. Otherwise, why bother?
If you put $20,000 into the stock market tomorrow, would it pay you $350, $400 in dividends every single month, 12%, 13% on that money?
Not on average.
No.
No, that's right. And that's where I think these seminar investors don't really have that.
Correct.
They just think, we're just going to buy property. And that's where a lot of people make that mistake. Like, okay, let's just buy in Florida. Let's just buy in Arizona. Let's mm-hmm. buy in Hawaii. Let's buy in California. You know, and the assumption that it's always going to go up and it's going to be so easy. No, it's passive, but there's work that goes into it.
Well, I mean,
you have to recognize that it's not nearly
your rental portfolio the way you manage your stock portfolio, the way you manage any investment, right? If you just throw the money in there and not pay attention to it, mm-hmm. you're going to get burned.
Well, it's a business.
It's a business.
It is a business.
You do have to approach it with business acumen. And if you don't have business acumen, go get some before you invest. Because what you described there, you said seminar and investor in the same phrase, but the people you then described aren't actually investors.
No, they were gamblers.
Right.
They were more gamblers than anything else. And frankly, one of the things that I learned through that experience, so again, to summarize, I'm going to just use the words, you can bleep them out later. I was scared. I was very, very scared about like the things that I didn't know.
Right.
So, but I took the time to then jump in and go to these investment clubs. It was actually the Marshall Reddick investment group way back when. I think they're still in business. And there's several things that occurred through that, which was one, I was learning about different markets and learning how to evaluate properties on the side. I was reading books on incorporation, reading books on investing in real estate. But most importantly, I was networking and getting to know the people in these investment clubs. And I don't mind saying this now, but what I learned at the time is that most people are pretty stupid. They're pretty stupid. And they were far too trusting in anybody that was sitting up there and peddling their properties in Columbus, Ohio, or wherever the heck it was. Far too trusting. They were just assuming that the market was going to keep going up and it's going to be easy to refinance. And I was at least savvy enough at the time to go, okay, it can't always continue to go up. So as a result of knowing that from a business perspective, we built out our fund. And we went into it with a mindset that this isn't going to be great all the time. And you know what happened? In the first 6 months, Richard, that we owned these five properties in Tennessee, a tenant stopped paying and our property manager had to evict them. And my wife goes, oh my gosh, like right away. Oh my God, this is happening right away. And I said, time out, honey. Time out. If this is going to cause us issues right out of the gate, then we shouldn't be in the real estate business, because this is what happens.
Right.
And this is far different, Brett, than investing in an index mutual fund, an S&P index mutual fund. That is really passive.
But you go into an investment scenario, any investment scenario has risk.
That's right.
So you do your due diligence, you learn,
mm-hmm.
you pick the right markets, the right kind of asset to invest in
mm-hmm.
to mitigate your risk, obviously. Mm-hmm. But there's never an investment with zero risk.
That's right.
If you want an investment with zero risk, there's no such thing. You might as well go take your money, stuff it in mason jars and bury it in the backyard and hope that nobody steals it.
Even then there's risk because that inflation goes up and now that's worth less. Look, we one immediately made an LLC. And how some of these people buy investment properties and keep them in their own name, just absolute morons. Number two, because we wanted to mitigate, not reduce to zero, Brett, but mitigate risk, we also bought a large umbrella policy.
Okay.
Do you know how much umbrella policies cost? They're like nothing.
Right.
Okay. And the idea behind that was if somehow the LLC, you know, that we pierced the corporate veil of the LLC and somebody got really, really hurt, there was the umbrella policy that can then help mitigate that risk. And knowing those things, and again, that was my own self-education, knowing those things. So seeing how dumb everybody else was and they were buying properties, knowing that I was going to do my own math, and I did, had my spreadsheet. And then from a corporate perspective and a risk mitigation perspective, doing the umbrella policy and the LLC, that then gave me the confidence to say, great, let's do this. And we bought five properties within 90 days. But we weren't doing it like flippantly. Like we weren't just saying, okay, great, whatever comes across our table, we're just going to buy. We, with a fine-tooth comb and a spreadsheet, evaluated these properties.
Right.
And I'm going to say this to you now, and I know you already know this. Your listeners may flip their lids. Until this very week, I have never seen any of our properties, Chattanooga, Nashville, Memphis, since 2007, we've bought and sold properties in Tennessee. Not until this week, 2025, have we actually seen those properties. And to the uninitiated, they go, wait a minute, you bought a piece of real estate without seeing it. Like, have you been to Atlanta and gone to Coca-Cola? No. Nope. No, you haven't. Have you been to Seattle and gone to Amazon? No, you haven't. So what's the difference?
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Marissa has now joined us. Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
I know the weather's kind of crappy. It's pouring down rain, thunder, and lightning. But anyway, if you get, and I want your true opinion on this. It's not a sales pitch. I want to get your opinion. Does it make it easier if you find yourself a team? Okay. To not have to show up and physically walk that property. If you find a team, agents, inspectors, contractors, management people that work in a team together to help you acquire and manage that asset. Is that the reason why you didn't show up? Because you felt like, hey, I got a good team in Memphis and I trust them. And if this is what they're saying, then I'm going to buy it. That's what I believe. So you didn't feel the need to jump on a plane and fly out here after you close.
That's 100% correct. Okay. And this isn't just about your real estate salesperson, okay?
Right.
There's this old adage in investment real estate, you know, you date your real estate salesperson, but you marry your property manager. The reality is you marry everybody else that's part of the team, okay? And what does that team look like? That team has so many different people as a part of it. So you've got your lender, a lender that gets it, a lender that understands you and understands investment real estate, okay? And there are a dime a dozen out there, all sorts of lenders, but it's the ones that understand that. You've got an inspector that you know that when they deliver that report to you, they're taking detailed pictures and you can get an assessment of that property. Your pest and termite person, you know, that's part of your team. The insurance broker, the insurance agent that you deal with, do they understand investment properties as well? And of course, the property manager and a great escrow agent, April Fowler at Title Assurance and Escrow, is absolutely fantastic. Building and a notary. We've got a notary that we absolutely love. And that sounds minor, but having a team like that, that you can trust and go, okay, Brett, they say that the thermostat has fallen off the wall and the condenser is broken. Can you pop over there and send me some pictures and show me what we're talking about there? Mm-hmm. There's so many agents that are like one hit, just like dating, one hit wonders.
Yep.
They're one and done and they're gone and they're not going to go that extra mile, for you. So the answer is yes. And yes, you need a team, and that team isn't just your real estate salesperson and your property manager. It includes the whole kit and caboodle.
Sure.
So to quote Ronald Reagan, he said, trust but verify. So tell me, you know, you want to trust all these teams that you find on the internet, or
that's right,
however you find them.
That's right.
What's your verification process? How do you determine that you can trust them?
Yeah, I'll give you an example of a property that I walked away from just a couple of months ago. So as I mentioned, we've got properties in other areas, Nashville in particular, and we like our property manager there. And he brought a property to my attention that was already under management. It turned out it was a duplex. And the math made sense, the 1% rule, Brett. Thanks again.
Yeah.
And so the 1% rule, by the way, just to saying it out loud for your audience, I don't pay attention to anything unless it's close. So I don't care how good it is. Don't tell me about the neighborhood. I don't give a rat's ass about anything. If it meets the 1% rule or it's close,
it's an investment.
Then I'll go further. Then I'll start taking a look. Okay, so the trust but verify. So two things. One, we sent out an inspector to that property, this duplex that was under management. It was in Shelbyville, Tennessee. And then second, I started calling other property managers because I wanted to verify the rent. So they said that the rent would be X, and I called three or four other property managers. Hey, we don't have anything in Shelbyville. We need a property manager. Can you give me a sense for what rents might be in that area? Does that take extra effort? It sure does. You know what I learned? That the rents that they were quoting were certainly high, and that didn't surprise me for a real estate salesperson to go, well, let me quote you the higher end of the range. And then having that inspector go in there, and I'll tell you what, man, it's such a great learning lesson, Richard, because that person went in there and did their job, and the retaining walls going down into the basement were collapsing. You go into the basement and you can literally see that the foundation was starting to buckle in a couple of areas there. And it's like, okay, are you trying to explain to me that this real estate person didn't know those things?
Right.
Of course they did. And they didn't tell me those things. Okay. Trust but verify. Great, thank you. You think this is a good property? You think that'll rent for this? But I'm going to go do the extra work myself, and I'm going to go verify that and ask those questions. I'm going to go back at you with a phrase that I just learned last year, Richard. This really great book, The Biggest Bluff by Maria Konnikova or something like that. And one of the phrases out of that book is less certainty, more inquiry. Less certainty, more inquiry. So in other words, Ask a lot more questions. Yep. It's a trust but verify. So ask a lot more questions.
Yeah, Brett will remember when he helped us buy our house. We just questioned.
Jesus, I was like, these British people ever shut the hell up?
God. Well, you know, there are frequently asked questions, yes. And I say, fuck you.
Well, you you asked all the right questions then.
Right.
Because honestly, I mean, the asking questions, some agents get offended. Even me as an agent talking to another agent about their property my client's interested in, you ask them questions and they get like offended, like, well, you don't trust me. Well, no, I don't.
That's right.
I don't, because if I talk my client into buying this property and it goes to who's he going to blame? Me, not you. So it's my job to cover that.
And that's going
to
mess up your trust with your
big
client.
Big time. Trick number one, if you call an agent and they really don't want to answer the questions you're asking, then you probably should hang up and find another agent.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I hate to say this, but it's like they're agents are a dime a dozen. There is low switching costs. And if you don't jive and you got, you know, if something feels wrong, you know, absolutely go someplace else.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, no question. You know, so many lessons learned in our real estate investing, you know, life so far, but none of them have been catastrophic. My brother, who has far less risk tolerance than me, as an example, 2 years ago, he says, do you think I should, you know, get into real estate investing? And I said, I don't think you have the temperament. You know, if you're going to spend 6 months debating about whether or not you should refinance a house and, you know, a quarter point or a half a point, or, you know, like if you, like, these are decisions that are like hard for you to make. When a tenant trashes your place and there's cat piss down the stairwell.
You sure it was cat piss?
No, I'm not sure at all. I think, you know, feces of some kind. And by the way, these are real stories. These are real stories. And the property manager said, this is going to take $6,000 to renew this place and put it back up for lease again. If that's going to break you, and B, if that's going to stress you out, either one of those things or both, you just do not have the temperament to be in real estate.
I think every new investor comes in with that attitude, like your brother, stressed out, nervous, just waiting for something to go wrong.
Overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed. I had an investor like that. Mm. We spoke to him yesterday. He called while we were in the truck. We had him here last year on a podcast, I think, and he said the biggest thing that has changed for him is when he learned how to not be emotionally attached to his properties.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, Brett, I used to stay up at night. And he used to call me. He'd text me at midnight, freaking out about stuff.
Oh.
He said, as soon as I let go of all that, my properties started performing better.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, they weren't. But on paper, they were. They were really performing. But I was looking for every reason for them not to be performing. He was talking himself out of being an investor. He was so stressed about it. He said, as soon as I let that go, now he's buying two more properties next week. So
it's one of those, like, you're holding on to it so tight that, you know, it's getting away from
you.
You
got to get away from buying the glitter and glaze and lace and get away from the romantic notion of your rental property. I own a rental property. I'm an investor. I'm a landlord. Huh. Get away from all that and look at it just as a true investment.
It really is.
If you look at it as a true investment, handle it as a true investment, you'll sleep better at night. You'll probably make money at it.
Yeah.
And eventually you're going to be a very wealthy individual.
It's just business.
So I'm laughing because, you know, today you and I spent several hours looking at some of our properties that we've recently purchased.
And that brings, I got a question about that.
Okay, great. And remember, this is coming from the perspective of my wife and I have owned investment real estate since 2007. And up until this week, we have never seen them. I am not convinced that an investor, out-of-state investor, seeing the neighborhoods and seeing the properties themselves is actually a good thing.
Right.
Because of that emotional attachment. Mm-hmm. I'm walking into a property and I'm seeing like, oh, this little thing over here, it's not my property. It is my property. It's not where I'm living.
Right.
And it's just a business and it's just an investment. And the fact that there's a pile of lumber from the trees on the neighbor's lawn next door, and it's like, when's that going to get cleaned up? Like, that's part of this sort of emotional thing,
right?
That, like, you know what, it's almost like better that I have never seen any of these properties, because it really is a line on a spreadsheet. It really is an investment.
Right.
Kevin, you started out by explaining some of the mistakes you made up front, and I feel like we've gone full circle to suggest that you might be sitting on the fence wanting to invest, thinking you don't know everything yet. But it's a journey. You have to get started and learn as you go. So how would you speak to a new investor from that perspective?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Jump. Do it. So literally playing golf last week, and one of my buddies that I worked with for 10 years, he goes, you know, I've been thinking about it. Like, do you think I should just, you know, man up and just start doing it? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And I said, let me tell you the story about my absolute worst investment ever. Worst investment property ever. We lost $14,000. Now, that's a lot of money. I'm not saying that's not a lot of money. But we bought the property. The tenant, you know, trashed it, broke some stuff. And we sold it for a little bit more than what we paid for it less than a year later. $14,000. Did that suck? Yes, it absolutely sucked. There was a boatload of learning lessons out of that. Did that break us? No, it didn't break us. We learned a lot, and it didn't deter us even in the slightest. But you have to jump in. You don't know.
And a lot of people open up a business. Your first year in business, typically you lose money.
Sure.
Right? Does it mean you freak out and close the doors? No. You work on why you're losing money. You fix the problem.
Yes.
You move your marketing forward.
Yeah.
And you keep building it up. That's what the point of opening a business is. It's not... People have this misnomer that I'm going to buy a rental property and start making money. In some cases, you do,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Other cases, you don't. A moment comes up, or like
always
you said, a tenant 2 months into it bails on the property, and you realize they trashed the property.
Yeah, that's right.
But that's part of the risk you take when you invest. If you want good returns on investing, you got to take the risk. Like I said, there's no zero risk in investment.
No, 100%. And one of the things that we did that helped us feel much better about taking that leap was, one, incorporating it as an LLC, and two, buying an unbelievably affordable umbrella policy. I mean, for less than $2,000 a year or something like that, we've got multi-millions of dollars that if the LLC doesn't contain the big risk, there's multi-millions of dollars outside of that. And that allowed us to jump further and go, what's the worst case scenario? And I feel like by mitigating that risk, it allowed us to, you know, jump right in. And all of the learning, just like anything, riding a bike, skiing, podcasting, real estate investing. You can read books, but you just jump in. And one of the things that I can tell you is that the Memphis real estate market, I think, is very, very conducive to learning with mitigated risk, not no risk, not zero risk, but mitigated risk. You know, these properties that you and I purchased, Brett, this week, $146,000, $146,000, $153,000. Those aren't massive investments. And when you're talking about, you know, down payment plus closing costs, 40 grand each.
Banks carrying the balance.
Yeah, and the banks carrying the balance. Again, 40 grand is a lot of money, okay? No question, you know, about it. But $150,000 properties, you know, these aren't properties that are going to like double in 2 years.
No.
But they're also properties that are not going to go down by 50% in the next 2 years either. You know,
Memphis is a blue chip stock rental market. It never tanks, never skyrockets. It just slowly, steadily grows.
That's right.
And yeah, in my opinion, it's a good safe place to park your money if you want to be a real estate investor.
Let me do some quick math here, by the way. So in Tennessee, we've owned these properties now for 18 years, okay? And I had not yet looked at what our annual property appreciation rates were. We were always told early on that Tennessee is like the little engines that could. You're never going to see the big ups, but you're never going to see the big downs, you know, either. But these little, you know, it's a little engine that could, this great state. But I never really looked back on it. So after 18 years, I put the spreadsheet together again. And the average annual price appreciation on the properties that we have owned in Tennessee, not just in Memphis, has been a whopping 4%. Okay. That sounds awful, actually. Mm-hmm. Okay. But what investors sometimes forget is that that's a leveraged 4%. So if I have a $100,000 property and I put $20,000 down on it and I made $4,000 a year, that's 20%.
20%. I suck at math.
I'm here for you, man.
Thank you, man.
Yes.
Yeah, your example you gave earlier was $4,000, 20%.
Yeah.
When you said $100,000 house.
Well, my point is I try to preach that to people. It's like they muddy the waters with all these expenses and mortgage payments and PITI insurance, all this stuff. But at the end of the day, if I'm giving you $1,000 to put in your stock market account, it costs you zero to do that. Does that sound like a bad deal?
No, that's right.
Exactly. I'm giving you $1,000 a month to put into your investment account,
your asset,
your portfolio.
Yeah, that's exactly
right. And when you boil it down to the simplest terms, that's the way it works. All right, so we're going to wrap up. Kevin, thanks for being here.
Happy.
I think he's going to stick around for another episode, right?
Yeah, great.
If you want to reach out to us, call us at 901-692-7401 or mymemphisinvestmentproperties.com.
For more common sense real estate tips, listen and subscribe at 5 o'clock somewhere podcast.com. The 5 o'clock somewhere real estate investor podcast is a Sound Ideas Group production.